You've heard AM, you've heard FM. Now, tune in to DM Radio, the world's longest-running show about data. Each week, host Eric Cavanaugh interviews the brightest minds in the world of information management. Want to be on a show? Send an email to info@dmradio.biz. Now, here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
Hello and welcome back once again. It is time for DM Radio. Yes, indeed. My name is Eric Cavanaugh. I will be your humble, if excitable, host for the show that is designed, after all, to peel away the marketing veneer, get down to brass tacks, and figure out what is going on in the world of data. Big data, of course, is all the rage, but little data is still driving many companies. Don't be fooled by all the advertising promotions you see around the world. Little data is still very important. Stuff like customer data, your name, your address, where you live, which products you bought, so on and so forth. All that data is really important. It's being coalesced in many ways and then used, infused, if you will, enriched with big data of all different kinds and shapes. Lots of that cool stuff is happening. A lot of it's happening in the cloud these days, of course. That is where the new center of gravity lives. And you've seen all the major vendors now in the data management space move to the cloud. Took a while, took a bit longer than I thought it would take, but it's happening right now. What else is happening right now is the Data Governance Conference in Chicago. Hop online to dataversity.net for all the latest with their conferences. Of course, they're our partner here on DM Radio these days. And we're putting together the editorial calendar right now for next year. So if you've got an idea for what you want to hear or learn on DM Radio next year, send me an email, info@dmradio.biz. The topic for today, be prepared, how data prep empowers business. So data prep is this really cool concept that came along in the last half decade or so, and it's really designed to help end users and analysts and other folks who are not necessarily in the IT department improve the quality of their data. So a lot of times in the past, you would have to basically ring up the IT department or call someone in IT to get them to do a data quality project, and tools were used to improve the quality of addresses and names and phone numbers and all that kind of fun stuff. And that still happens, but data prep decided to kind of turn that whole model inside out and allow end users of technology, business users, for example, who traditionally did not do that kind of work, to do some enrichment, some data quality improvement, and so forth. And it's a pretty big move, and I think it's a very smart move. And now we're hearing data prep from a lot of different vendors who are doing some very cool things. So on the show today, we're going to hear from Christopher Berg of Data Kitchen, Paul Madai of SAP, and Will Davis of Trifacta, each of whom have some interesting stories to tell about how data prep can empower business. And the bottom line really is that data quality really does matter. You keep hearing this term customer experience these days from a lot of the big vendors. And what that means is they figured out that companies really do need to get your data correct. They need to get your name spelled correctly. They need to know where you live, what you've bought, all that kind of stuff. And that information, that insight needs to be very close to frontline workers. Somebody in a call center, for example, somebody at point of purchase, someone you encounter at a store who want to help you find the right product, for example. You want to be able to empower all those folks with the right data at the right time to be able to do the ultimate job for the customer. So customer experience really is driving a lot of this fun stuff. So let's go around the room and bring our guests in one at a time. Maybe I'll start with Will Davis from Trifacta, a company I've known about for, well, I think almost since you guys came out of stealth a few years ago. Very, very interesting technology focused on data prep. So Will, tell us a bit about your company and what you guys are doing in the data prep space.
Sure, Eric. First of all, thanks for having me on the show, and thanks for having a show specifically on data preparation. Really excited to talk about data prep and what we do at Trifacta. So Trifacta has been around. We were originally founded in 2012. We've been recognized as the company that sort of founded this market or this category of data preparation. The company was founded out of joint research over 20 years across Stanford and UC Berkeley that were taking the best minds in data visualization, parallel computing, and human-computer interaction, and using all of those mind power to take what the biggest bottleneck in data is around data preparation and make it more efficient, make a broader set of people able to do that work, and for that to scale across any type of data. So You know, Trifact has been around. We were founded in 2012. Our first commercial release was in 2014. And since then, we've sort of been recognized by both industry analysts from Gartner, from Forrester, Dresner, Ovum Research as sort of the top data preparation technology in the market. We're exclusively focused on data prep. That's all we do. We're not bundled into a broader platform or bundled in within analytics. And we've had a tremendous amount of success working with some of the world's largest brands, you know, establishing a platform for data preparation that feeds their analytics, their data science, and their machine learning workloads. You know, at this point, we have over 1,000 paying customers globally and a number of different editions we sell. We also have a OEM product with Google called Cloud Data Prep on their cloud platform that is based on Trifactive technology. So we've seen a tremendous amount of momentum in this space broadly, and our business has seen a tremendous amount of success as part of that as well.
Yeah, and you guys really focused on empowering the end user to make changes to the data. So, for example, information in a CRM system or an ERP system, for example, customer relationship management, enterprise resource planning. These are very serious enterprise systems, and historically, only a handful of people were allowed to make changes to those systems for various reasons. One was theoretically to improve data quality, to watch out for errors. But can you walk us through kind of how the Trifacta model works and how you came about this plan and what exactly it all does?
Yeah, so you know, in the research and the founding of the company, we recognized that the biggest bottleneck in any data project was the preparation piece. So getting access to data, getting in the right format, and then publishing it to whatever system or application that where that data was needed to be landed. And so a big part of this was just the back and forth, why this bottleneck was occurring, was the back and forth between a business person who had the context for the data and the technical resource or IT individual that was implementing the code or the ETL process to make that data ready. And if anyone is familiar with that process, often a back and forth between those two individuals over weeks or months to actually get that process right. So, you know, the biggest focus for us was let's enable the people who actually have the context for the data, who understand the business problems this data addresses, to be able to do this work themselves. So there was a dramatic change in the interface, the workflow, and how they're actually able to build a recipe of transformation to make data ready for the downstream use of that. So we've done a lot of work in making a sort of very visual, intuitive interface that allows people to prepare data, to see data, see quality issues, and to address them within that interface. And then we also leverage machine learning extensively within the product to help guide them to data quality errors, help guide them through the different elements of the data that need to be cleaned up and structured effectively or joined together for what they're trying to do with the data. So I think that's been a key part of our process in enabling those individuals who know the data best but may not have a background in Python or R or know how to use an ETL product like Informatica to enable them to do that in a very familiar visual interface, leveraging machine learning to sort of guide them along that process. And if you look at sort of the model that companies like Tableau or Qlik did in the data visualization space and sort of, you know, establishing self-service and enabling that broadly across the organization, I would say that's a good model for what we are doing in the data preparation space and sort of enabling self-service for a lot of business users to be able to do this work themselves in sort of a governed fashion.
Yeah, I mean, basically you're shining a light on what was a sort of a lights out process. And what I mean by that is, for those who don't know, ETL, extract, transform, load, that was the mainstay, still is in many regards, of data movement in large organizations. You would extract data from your ERP system, transform it into whatever format was required to the target source, and then load that into the target system, like a data warehouse, for example, or a cube or something like that, or even some other system. And what you've done is kind of shown a light on that, on those pipes, to allow people to see what's happening in there, to better understand what data is in this target system. It's data profiling in a way. It's data profiling with functionality built around being able to make changes, right?
Yeah, so we combine a lot of elements of different technologies that have been separated in the past. So data profiling is definitely one of them. We refer to that as interactive exploration, where when you crack open a data set, we'll show you the different attributes that are present in that data set, how the values in each of those attributes are distributed. So we do some inference on the data to understand, hey, is this attribute a string? Is it numeric? Is it a date? And then we have purpose-built visualizations within our product to organize the data according to that attribute, so it allows you to better understand what's in the data more quickly. So we'll have specific visualizations for the time element, specific elements, visualizations for strings, so you can more quickly understand the content of those attributes to better understand how it can be leveraged downstream. So data profiling is definitely one of them. We have that very deeply embedded into our product. One of the founders of the company, Jeffrey Heer, was one of the creators of D3.js. So we have a visualization is a very strong foundation of our company and our product. I would say also data quality is another aspect of our product that traditionally has been sort of a separate technology, but we do a lot of inference to understand, format discrepancy, missing values, null values, data quality issues within your data, and using machine learning to present those to users and give them guidance on how they might want to clean that up. And then the interface for how you build transformations and build sort of a data pipeline is unique in our sense and allowing users just to click and interact with their data shown visually on the screen to then develop the transformation process. And then one of the things that we have really invested in over the past year or two is sort of how do you operationalize these recipes that you've developed into data pipelines that can run in production. So, Trifacta was really focused initially on how do we create an interface and how do we enable users to do this work themselves. And since then, we have a lot of organizations that are saying, hey, this is great. I can build, a recipe to transform this data set, but I want to now run this pipeline and develop in production. So we've done a lot of work in the product to, harden our management around taking pipelines developed in our product and to set them into production to run on a certain schedule, to parameterize them, to monitor them, and so that Trifacta can go from just being a self-service product to then, bridging the gap to actually running production workloads that have been developed by analysts in our product.
Okay, cool. No, this is good stuff. And, really there's so much happening in the industry right now, and I think that you guys are definitely on the cutting edge of the data prep movement, and lots of other companies are getting into the mix these days, including one of the biggest software companies in the world, SAP. I just came back from their conference last week, actually, in Vegas, and saw some of the latest out there. But SAP, of course, threw down the gauntlet. Hasso Plattner, one of the co-founders of SAP, threw down the gauntlet like 11 or 12 years ago now on the whole concept of in-memory and in-memory architectures. And what that means really is instead of relying on spinning disk like old hard drives, SAP said, we're going to focus on in-memory, which is anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 times as fast as using a spinning disk. And that has really, I think, paid some serious dividends for SAP in the last few years as the market kind of caught up with that vision. And SAP is now offering some data prep technology as well, some agile data prep technology that gets baked right into this HANA platform. And we have Paul Madai from SAP on the line to talk about that. So, Paul, thanks for joining DM Radio. Tell us a bit about what you folks are doing with agile data prep and how it's changing businesses for your customers.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Thank you, Eric, for having me on today. Yes, so SAP has been heavily invested in memory, as you say, for a number of years with our SAP HANA platform. And just for users who may not be familiar with that, I'm sorry, listeners who may not be familiar with that, SAP HANA is an in-memory columnar translytical database and a platform that combines not only that in-memory processing and speed, but other capabilities like embedded analytics, machine learning, blockchain, new technologies to enable our customers, not only our applications to run on this platform far better and far faster than before, but also to enable our customers to develop their own applications with all of these technologies and to do it at that in-memory speed and power. So about 3.5 years ago, we released our SAP Agile Data Preparation Solution, which is also data preparation. In other words, allowing end users to easily, discover, import, profile, transform, cleanse, merge, match, deduplicate data sets for analysis or for data quality purposes or for a number of use cases, for instance, for early data discovery in a data migration project, for harmonizing data across the enterprise, and also to product or productionize those data pipelines also so that you know, they can be made productive and they can be run by IT. So in other words, instead of starting with IT, I think we just heard about that from Trifacta, instead of starting with IT, let's start with the data experts. Let's let the data experts determine how the data should be dealt with, and then let's hand that over to IT as a production-ready pipeline that can be hardened, scheduled, and run.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, self-service is one of the big movements these days for obvious reasons, but self-service is hard. It's just like this whole concept of simplification. If you have a simple workflow for your customer, there's usually a pretty complicated engine underneath that making all that stuff happen. And I think that the demand for self-service, which has really been driven by a lot of cloud-based applications, including consumer-based or consumer-focused cloud applications, is that's all driving expectations of users, and now users expect to be able to do things themselves. They expect that. And I think that's one of the driving forces for really placing a lot of focus and value and attention on a technology like data prep, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You know, first of all, I like to say that simple isn't necessarily easy. But the other thing is, you talk about self-service and empowering people. I like to say that, like security, data quality is everybody's job. Data quality is so critical, as you pointed out earlier, to the organization and to everybody in the organization, that we really need to democratize data and bring data quality to the masses so that everybody is participating in that data quality effort. In effect, what we want are citizen stewards who are shepherding the data every time they interact with it. And so those are the capabilities we bring through our Agile data preparation tool.
Yeah, and that's really important. That steward is one of the most important roles, it seems to me. Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say that steward is a really, really important role because that's the person who sits between an information system and a business user, basically. But it can also talk to the IT. They can talk IT, they can talk business, and they understand the data very intimately, right?
Right. The people who work with the data every day, they have a deep understanding of the data. But, you know, everybody who touches data has some idea of problems. Everybody who deals with data notices problems, but in the past they haven't had a way to do anything about it. What we're trying to do is open that up so that, you know, if you see something, say something. If you have the ability to discover a data quality problem and fix it, then that improves the quality of data for the entire organization. You know, that's what we're trying to bring to all of the data workers who are touching that data and make it easier for them and faster for them in the process.
Yeah, that's important. I know we got a break coming up here in about 90 seconds, but you've got a really cool case study with McKesson. Can you tell us what McKesson did with data prep?
Yeah, McKesson is using the SAP Agile Data Preparation Solution in their procurement processes, and they've just had fantastic results with that, Eric. They've reduced the time it takes for data preparation tasks by 97% from approximately 30 days to 2 to 4 hours. Just a fantastic increase. They've been able to reduce headcount. Fewer resources required for every major vendor account. So they're going down from 5 to 2 to 3 employees to handle these accounts, and they can consolidate more than 30,000 supplier records through Agile data preparation very quickly.
Wow. 30,000. That's pretty impressive.
30,000.
Yeah, I think the key here is
from 30 days to 2 to 4 hours.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, yeah, that's really good stuff.
Yeah.
And it keeps the trains running on time, basically, right? It allows you to optimize processes and streamline activities, and that's what people want. I love the concept of letting end users really help out with the process and really make things happen. So, folks, we're talking all about data prep today on DM Radio. Send us an email, info@dmradio.biz, or tweet with the hashtag of DM Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to DM Radio.
The author of this study did not, apparently, get the memo. There are no differences between men and women. Are we clear? They are exactly the same. But if that's true, why is this study so very interesting to employers and to Muammar Gaddafi before he died? He only had women guards, you see. That's next on Dan's Life.
Think you've got a good radio show idea? Gab Radio Network can help you with your podcast or radio show. Find out more by emailing sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
The Journal of Economic Inquiry has revealed that men, when previously having been given bonuses, see those bonuses cut, cease to work as hard as they did when they were incentivized with those bonuses. Women, the journal found, kept rolling right along. The productivity of male employees dropped by an average of 12%, and for women, nada. Now that this is being studied in even greater depth, employment experts wonder if we won't see more industries start hiring more women than men. Seems pretty likely. But when an employer gives something and then takes it away, I know I start looking elsewhere. It's like being in a loveless marriage. You see, I used to have that. Now I don't get it. Huh, I wonder what else could be out there. I'd say it's pretty natural. But this study should open the door to more healthy conversations about in what other arenas men and women might respond differently. Because men and women, as much as they are the same, obviously are different. At least in the way they are equipped physically, the hardware and the software, and in how they react to different stimuli, to situational responses, and awareness.
Find out more about Dan's Life on Facebook. Search @French and Friends. That's @French and Friends.
Maybe one day we can talk respectfully and calmly about gender or sex or assignment or identity and not leave biology out of the discussion. This is Dan's Life.
Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
Here on DM Radio, talking all about getting things right in the data world, data prep, improving data quality, and really crowdsourcing is kind of what it boils down to. Crowdsourcing, letting end users in your organization improve data, enrich data, find data. I'm going to bring back Paul Madai from SAP here in the second segment. There is this whole concept of data curation, Paul, and I really love that term because it implies the responsibility of making sure that context is understood and is explained in a way that people can really understand. And discovery is so important too, especially these days with so much big data out there. And the fact is that a technology like data prep can be used in just about any area of the business. You mentioned procurement, in customer relations, in sales forecasting. Anywhere you go, there's a way to enable end users to basically enrich their data somehow, some way, right? Can you talk a bit about data prep as a means for enabling discovery of data and valuable patterns in data and the curation of that data?
Yes, I'd love to. Yes, absolutely. You talked about crowdsourcing. You used the word crowdsourcing. One of the things we know is that nobody has the complete picture on their own. So with a data preparation solution, users should be able to go out and find specific data sets or point at specific data sets, whether those are structured in some application or data warehouse database, whether they're out in a Hadoop repository, if they're out on the web, and be able to bring that data in and automatically understand the data, understand where the data quality problems are, understand what the types of data are, where we have missing values, incorrect patterns, and understand what the context of that data is. So you want to be able to combine data from different sources, find those hidden patterns within the data, and then, based on your understanding that you've gained from that, to be able to transform the data with just one-click fixes. You don't want to have to write macros. You don't want to have to use complex formulas. And then you also want to be able to collaborate with your team across these data sets so that everybody is looking at the same thing, everybody has input into the data sets that you're looking at, and everybody can then share their ideas for how to take that data, improve it, expand it, use it within the organization.
Yeah, that's really important. And this all helps the larger organization get a better handle on its data, which is just critical. We are in the information economy. That's a reality. It's to be appreciated and understood, I would have to say. And so getting everyone in the organization to better understand their data, which is an incremental process, is really, really important. And to me, Paul, just one last comment from you before the roundtable. It seems to me like more organizations are starting to realize this. But what's your take on awareness in general with a concept like data prep? Do you think that enough people now know what this stuff is, or do we still need to educate folks about what's possible and what's available to them already?
Well, I think we still need to educate folks, because I think one thing that people aren't ready is what a beautiful experience it is to work in a good data prep tool. Users love it. When they get their hands on it, they love it. But, you know, with our... for instance, at SAP, we have thousands of customers who actually have licenses for our Agile Data Preparation solution through their licenses of HANA, and they don't even know it. And what we'd really like to do is see those customers, hey, get into a test system, install that Agile Data Preparation, because, as I say, when users work with a data preparation solution, it's like their eyes are opened up for the first time. They absolutely love it.
Yeah. Well, you want to be able to improve your data, I think. And I'll bring in our final guest today, Christopher Berg from a company called Data Kitchen. And you guys have another really interesting concept called Data Ops, which I thought was very clever. And for those who haven't heard this before, it's really the data-oriented complement to DevOps. And for those who don't know the term DevOps, that refers to development operations, where developers writing code are working directly with the people who are running the business operations, usually in the front end, like in a web-based environment, but also on the back end too, patching in some bit of functionality or optimizing some workflow somewhere. And DevOps really revolutionized how changes can be made to the application infrastructure of an organization. And it's really good stuff, but we kind of forgot about the data a little bit. And so Data Kitchen is focused on that data side of the equation. And with that, Christopher Berg, tell us a bit about what you guys are doing in the data prep space and why you think it's important that people know what to do with that stuff.
Well, it's interesting because when you said changes, that's really, I think, the important thing with data, because I think fundamentally data and data analytics or data science or data visualization or data prep is an idea business. And how ideas don't live in one person or one organization in the company, they're all over. And so you've got a situation now where there's a lot of great tools out there for people to express their ideas. And some of those people may live in a traditional world where they use ETL tools or they write SQL code. Some of those may have a really wonderful visual interface to be able to interact with the data. And the challenge becomes you've got these needs that organizations have to balance centralization versus freedom. And maybe another way to look at it is sort of federal government, state government, local government. And big companies, if ideas are everywhere, and good data, since data itself is pretty messy and pretty disorganized, and the quality of that data is tantamount, and it's an idea business, how do you resolve that contrast between centralization and freedom in putting data together for analytics in whatever form? Because the data ops view of the world is that people love tools. They love their tools. And I'm sure I've met people who love data end user data prep tools. I've met people who love writing SQL, who love writing Python. And I find that people are best at expressing their ideas in their tool of choice. And so if you've got a lot of ideas popping around the organization, but the concern is that these ideas are going to create some level of chaos. And an example of that chaos could be a definition of a market basket, like who are the market baskets in your customers? And it's surprising that organizations will have this problem that, like, who are the products in a market basket, and they'll have several definitions of it. And one way to make sure that your company has one definition is you say one team is in charge of doing everything, and it's sort of the, you know, the Brothers Karamazov boot on the neck sort of idea, that it's central control, and that actually works. It does create standards, but it also sort of reduces your idea flow. And I think since we're Americans, we believe in decentralization, believe in democracy, the democratization of idea creation is important. And so if you've got lots of people in the organization, in essence, using their favorite tools to put data together, how do you then make sure that you don't end up with sort of multiple versions of the truth or multiple ideas that are in conflict? And our view of the world is that that's resolved through these what we call data ops, or focusing on the operational side of data. And that since there's all these tools, what they are really doing underneath the covers is creating software code that's similar to the same kind of code that people use to build websites or, you know, run our web browsers or sort of runs the world. And the management of that complexity of the code, how that code goes from those individual tools and is tested and deployed and orchestrated, is what data ops is about. And so we're in some ways trying to resolve this, freedom versus control, centralization, state, federal control in analytics with data ops.
Yeah, it's really important stuff. And it seems to me that having an awareness around data ops is really critical for organizations, not just for governance reasons, but for accuracy, for reasons of, you know, getting the right product to the right person at the right time. There are all kinds of benefits to this. And I think that maybe for end users out there who are not too familiar with the space, it may seem unnecessary. But I think the key is that these traditional environments are so incredibly complex. And so if you don't have some mechanism for managing data ops, you're really just, you know, looking at log files and just trying to figure out what's going on, and you're kind of flying in the dark, right?
Yeah, and if you think about it, let's say there's a big company with 1,000 people, and they've got maybe three groups of people. They got a central IT organization who puts some data together. Maybe they have a divisional group who also puts it together. And then they've got individuals who are also putting data together and getting results. And chaos could ensue where everyone's doing different things. But the people who are usually closest to the customer, who are closest to the problem, can create ideas. And the diversity of tools that they have on their desktop that are really cheap and really fun to interact with data is great. And so one of the ways that we think about it is that as an idea is created, it should sort of earn the right to move its way down the stack. So if someone on an individual creates a great way to look at them, market basket of products, maybe that could be shared and promoted to the division, and eventually it can make it to the whole company. And so you don't have to decide everything centrally. You can let sort of 1,000 flowers bloom and have an agile process where these ideas can flow back and forth among the layers. And that's really hard to do if you don't have a sort of a consistent way to manage all those ideas as a set of code that you can deploy and test, and then you can actually have a team that sits in and talks about it. Because a lot of organizations end up with sort of the Hatfield and McCoys, like there's a lot of sort of grumpy IT people saying, oh, it's out of control, we got to get it under, and people in data governance, and then there's a lot of people on the business side doing a lot of great data work or kind of rolling their eyes at the central organization. And I'm just fairly frustrated at the level of Hatfield-McCoy, centralization versus freedom, well-governed versus chaos. And the sort of terms that people use, I think, are self-defeating. Because if everyone's in the idea business, shouldn't we all be about trying to get the best ideas with the best quality shared with everyone? And how can we do that in a diverse data set, diverse tool, diverse people world? And in some ways, that's what we're trying to do with we're trying to put data ops forward.
Well, and I think you bring up a really good point of federated versus centralized control. And what you kind of want is a balance of those two things, which a data ops / data prep program designed effectively will allow you to do, right? You don't want to constrain people too much, but you don't want to enable too many mistakes to be made. So there is a balance to be had, and I think it is through a sort of middle layer, or at least some kind of a policy that allows the end users to enrich the data, especially if you can record what was done and have that lineage, that traceability, so you can figure out over time, well, guess what? Every time Bob makes a change to the system, it turns out to be wrong. Well, you know, we either need to fire him or train him or do something. But these days, we have the capacity to maintain that lineage. And as such, I think it's a good idea to enable more control from the end users. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, because I think if you look at the work that people do with data, let's say they use, we have one of our biggest customers, Celgene, and they have sort of three levels in their data ops world. They have analysts who use a data prep tool called Alteryx, and sometimes Excel, visualizing it in Tableau. They have a central data warehouse in the cloud that's mainly built with SQL. And then they have another enterprise team that's really concerned with sort of master data management. And so they're a healthcare company, so they've got lots of data from lots of different sources, hundreds of sources, and they're all trying to figure out what's happening with physicians and payers and products. And linking that data together is hard. And so sometimes it's best that if an analyst will sit in their desktop data prep tool and put together some data, it may be great. It may not, because fundamentally, it's not all data is predictive. Some of it's actually quite useless. And sifting and finding the sort of needle in the haystack is what we want to do as a company, and helping people do that and putting tools in their hand. But once they find that needle, that you want to be able to say, okay, I've got this working, but I want to put this into production and I want to share it. So maybe it goes from my desktop into the cloud-based data warehouse. And maybe from there it goes into being mastered across the company. And these multiple layers, making sure that they're all working, that all that code that is driving each layer is part of the same system, that all that code is tested and deployed the same way, is what we're trying to accomplish with DataOps. And that's, you know, it's one way of resolving the centralization versus freedom.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And you want to have traceability and back to all this stuff. And I guess we'll kind of blend into the roundtable here. Will Davis, I'll bring you back in. There is this whole new capability of retaining data lineage on specific records that is, you know, just part and parcel to the new way of doing business. And that really, I think, is something that people need to recognize and understand. And it does give us greater capability to give more power to the end users. But what do you think, Will?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to build trust in data across your organization, the first thing they ask is, how did you come up with this data? Where did it originate from? What was done to the data? How it was manipulated? So I think there's a burgeoning debate over where lineage should be stored. One of the things that we see is lineage being embedded into application-specific silos versus a more centralized view. And sort of where we view the world is that this needs to be all open with APIs, and that there needs to be some sort of centralized catalog where all lineage, all metadata is centralized for analysts to be able to have the context for their data versus having lineage stuck in specific applications that are siloed. So I think that is a critical piece of this in terms of, you know, broadening access to data and building trust around analysis across the organization.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Trust is a key factor. And just knowing that you have the ability to make a change, I think that's one of the critical success factors in the modern enterprise. So we're talking all about data prep today on DM Radio. Folks, send a tweet with the hashtag of DM Radio. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to DM Radio.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and Talkin' Pets, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com. If you run a large corporation, small business, or anything in between, you need ads to help get the word out. A full page in the newspaper sounds good. A TV spot sounds even better. But let's face it, newspapers are essentially last-minute wrapping paper, and a TV spot is just expensive and basically code for bathroom break. Talk radio is different. Commercials cost practically nothing to produce, and the listeners are loyal. They like what they like, and they stay tuned in. When they hear about a new product or service during their favorite show, they can't wait to try it out for themselves so they can talk about it with their friends. And you know how radio listeners like to talk. If you want to add radio to your marketing portfolio, you need the Gab Radio Network. Gab Radio is the team of full-service experts you've been looking for, from writing to production, distribution, voiceover, and more. We make sure your spots are paired with the right shows in the right markets at the right time of day so the right people can hear. Since we're in over 100 markets across 34 states, Canada, and American Samoa, I'd say it's a pretty good place to start. If you want to know more, just email sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com. Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, folks, into the home stretch here on DM Radio today. It's time for the roundtable segment with our wonderful guests today. We're talking all about data prep, and we've got Paul Madai from SAP and Christopher Berg of Data Kitchen on the line, and we also have Will Davis from Trifacta. And Will, I'll throw this one out to you. You know, it's one thing to come up with a great idea for a new process for your business or a workflow, for example, in the case of data quality or data enrichment. It's another thing entirely to put that into production. Anyone out there in the IT world who has ever rolled out a new system knows that when you go into production, a whole new set of challenges tends to throw up interesting hurdles and roadblocks for you to deal with. And that's the kind of thing that you have to worry about. And that's why IT guys get nervous when business people get big ideas about how to change things, because they know they're responsible for keeping all those pipes working and keeping the trains running on time, so to speak. But Will, what can you tell us about ways to optimize and kind of streamline that process to make it easier for cool ideas in the business to make their way into production?
Yeah, and I'll take a pretty well understood framework to talk about this with is, you know, people, process, and technology. I think the people aspect of this is important, where you're going to have your analysts, your business analysts, business users, being the ones that develop these new pipelines that are the sort of context experts that are driving the innovation. Once they have something that they think is useful for a broader organization, they're then going to pass that off to a data engineer who is, their job is going to be to take that pipeline and run it through a set of tests, whether that you want to call that data ops or it's similar to the SDLC process, where you're going development, staging, production, and testing that. And then so that when it's ready to go to production, all of the kinks, all of the hardening that needs to be done to put it in production is critical. And that's also part of the process, like how is the handoff done across those different team members, and how do you make sure that that's clean as they have context for that? And on the technology side, I think you need to have the pipelines that are generated by the business users need to be able to be compiled into the computing environments that production workloads are running. So, you know, one of the things we do at Trifacta is we have the ability to take a recipe an end user maybe built on their desktop and then run that, let's say, in a parallel environment in Hadoop or on Amazon leveraging EMR. So the logic that is being generated to, or the logic that's being created to build that data pipeline needs to be transferable to the technology infrastructure where production workloads are being run. And that's a critical aspect of this handoff that is related to the technology you're using. So I think it's all about identifying roles in people, the process of doing these handoffs, and then having technology that is able to be moved from where the innovation is happening to where the production workloads are being run.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. And Paul, I'll bring you back in. You know, one of the things that fascinates me about this whole in-memory concept is that it really does change the game in terms of how things could get done, and of course, how quickly they can get done, and how quickly they can take effect. Right? We live in an instant gratification world these days. People want their Amazon Prime product delivered by drone within an hour, for example. There's all kinds of delivery stuff out there in the consumer world that is, again, driving expectations, getting people's hopes up about what can happen and what cannot happen. And I have to think that in the data prep world, that in-memory architecture has a pretty significant impact in that, for example, you can update someone's record right then, and guess what? It's now updated in the system of record that needs to be accessed by any system. You know, I think just as a random example here, the delivery guys like FedEx and UPS, they figured out early on the importance of tracking that stuff and then exposing that tracking information to the end user, right? Well, now, if you move, if you wind up going somewhere while a package is being delivered, you can actually retarget that package. Well, how cool is that? And that's just an example of how benefit can accrue from having a real-time environment. Can you talk just very quickly about how the in-memory concept and architecture of HANA kind of really empowers the whole concept of data prep and allows end users to quickly and effectively update records and enrich records in a way that's going to affect their experience with the company overall?
Yes. So, you know, the CIO of Omni Hotels put it best. I can't remember his name at the moment, but he said it's no longer the big beating the small. It's the fast beating the slow. And that's where we're at in today's world. So, yes, so HANA being an in-memory platform is blazingly fast. And since our customers are running their businesses of every size on SAP HANA, that's their database of record. So that's where the data lives. Our Agile data preparation solution is running right there on HANA. So the data is discoverable. It doesn't have to be in HANA, but the data is discoverable. And you can have an immediate effect with the data, and that, you know, is data of any size is one of the advantages. You're not limited to the size of the data set. One of the things we do is we work with our data hub solution and our Agile data preparation solution work together. So, for instance, even if you're working on, say, a huge Hadoop repository, you can sample that data in Agile data prep, and then have the data hub actually, you know, sample the data, go through a cleansing routine, figure out what needs to be done with the data, try different strategies, find the one that works, and then push that execution down to the Hadoop layer so that it can actually go and work on that entire huge data set. So very, very flexible and fast across all these different technologies. And without being limited to the size of the data sets that you're working with or the complexity of the operations you need to perform.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And Christopher Berg, I'll bring you back in from Data Kitchen. You kind of hinted at this earlier about the importance of effective collaboration and what we're seeing these days, and it's magnified in the in-memory environment, but even if you're not in that kind of architecture nonetheless, it still is the case that you can have many people working on the same project at the same time in different locations, and so unless they each have visibility into what the other one is doing, you're going to have some interesting things happening. You're going to have people stepping on others' toes. You're going to have people truncating the efforts of other people and so forth, and that's not good. You want to be able to collaborate, and I think, once again, some of these technologies like Google Docs, for example, have really raised expectations from people about what is possible. And the fact that now through Google Docs for free, you can all be on a team editing a Word document or a, you know, just some kind of even a spreadsheet, for example, simultaneously and each see what the other one is doing is really very powerful stuff. And when you talk about a technology like data ops, for example, it's really important that everyone involved, all the stakeholders, the business people, the data engineers, the stewards, et cetera, have visibility into what's happening, right? Because then you've optimized the process of getting something done and you've minimized the chances of causing trouble in your team, right, Chris?
No, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you think about it, there's lots of people and lots of tools, and a lot of tools are creating lots of code. And since it's an ideas business, you've got to resolve this centralization versus control versus distributed control, because ideas can bloom everywhere. So people need to sort of edit a virtual Word document or a virtual Google Doc that has all that logic in that comes from different systems and be able to make sure it works. And centralization versus freedom is one axis, but the other axis is sort of development to production. And when people want to, and part of the Amazon expectation, and if you look at Amazon's website, it's a big, technically complicated thing. They're making changes to the code that underlies that website, not once a week, not once a day, but several times a second. And so they're able to actually move things from their development environments into their production environments lightning fast. And what is that value of that? Being able to, it's the value of that, if analytics is fundamentally about putting ideas with lots of people and using data to express them to move a business forward, the best way to do it is to get feedback from your customers and consumers, individual people in the company, quickly. And don't spend 3 months building something only to have someone say, nah, that's not quite right. And so how do you force feedback into the system? Well, one way to do that is to make it really easy for all those people and all their tools to take something and create a development environment that is replicated of, or a replicant, or close to what's in production, with the same data, the same tools, and be able to tweak it a bit and try something new. And then they could tweak it and do two things. One is they could see if that tweak worked, and then also see if that tweak broke something else in that big, technically complicated chain. And then they should be able to say, okay, it all works. I've really got high confidence. Can I push that back into production? And so there's this term that software developers have, and it's kind of derogatory, but it's a hairball. And what a hairball means is, like, you know, it's a bunch of hair all twisted together. And a lot of people, I think, in the analytics are creating hairballs of complexity. And that complexity just comes from all these tools and all this data and all this code. And you've got to unwind that complexity. And dealing with the hairball of analytics is very similar and to dealing with a really complicated Toyota production line, or dealing with how Amazon's code. And we've got to get out of the, I think people have to realize that, as, you know, Mark Andreessen, a guy who helped invent the internet browser, wrote this article that software is eating the world. And in a lot of ways, software, the how people work in a software environment and trying to avoid hairballs and focus on deployment and automation, yeah, I think is a good way to think about it. And that's partly what we're trying to do by getting this data ops movement forward and talking about it.
Well, I love it. Well, folks, we'll be talking all about data prep. Thanks so much for your time and attention. We'll catch up to you next week. You have been listening to DM Radio.